to Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted.com's podcast about graduate admissions. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted.com and the host of this podcast. Thank you for joining us. For today's segment of Admissions Straight Talk, I have invited Chris Ryan to join us. Chris is Vice President of Manhattan GMAT and author of Case Studies and Cocktails. He's an experienced teacher who previously taught for Teach for America and then earned his MBA from Duke's Fuqua School of Business, where he also taught. After graduation, Chris spent a couple of years at McKinsey & Company. When not writing books or teaching at or managing Manhattan GMAT, Chris pursues interests in the independent film world. Chris is here today primarily to discuss his book, Case Studies and Cocktails, which was published last year. I thought it would be of particular interest since so many members of the accepted community have recently been accepted or are hoping that next year at this time the info on Case Studies and Cocktails will be highly relevant to them. Case Studies and Cocktails is a comprehensive view of the world of B-School, not from the graduate's perspective so much, but from the perspective of those who are there, both students, what they wish they had known, and administrators, what they wish students had known when they first arrive on campus. Chris, thank you so much for joining me today on Admissions Straight Talk. Welcome.
Thank you, Linda. That was a very nice introduction, and I'm very happy to be here.
Great. And did I give a fair description of Case Studies and Cocktails?
Absolutely. I think it isn't about how to get in at all. It's about what to do once you've gotten in and then once you're there, of which there's not a whole lot out there, kind of surprisingly, to date.
I agree. There's not a lot there. Now, I can't say I read all 600 plus pages.
Yes, it functions well as a doorstop if needed, or the classic paperweight. You need to hold down other papers. You can do it with this book.
Or if you have a toddler and you want them to raise them up a little bit at the table, right? But
yep.
But I actually thought it would be a great reference also for somebody about to start business school. And some of the parts I thought were really more like mandatory reading, like choosing your schools to, you know, where to accept, and how to leave your previous job, and mm-hmm. how to get ready for the start of school. I thought that is a marvelous resource, and that's why I invited you here today. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to write Case Studies and Cocktails?
Sure. I think that the genesis on my part, my co-authors, Carrie Schuchart, and she also has an MBA from Columbia Business School. We came to it with slightly different perspectives. From my point of view, I wish I'd had something. And actually, from her point of view as well, she got into Columbia well in advance. I got into Fuqua just 2 weeks before classes started. So I showed up and I didn't know anything. I just felt lucky to be there. And so part of the experience was, part of the lesson for me in showing up at Fuqua was, wow, there's so much to acclimate yourself to. There's so much I wish I could have done before getting here, starting to read, say, The Wall Street Journal, The Economist,
right.
Familiarizing myself with a lot of basic business knowledge. I was coming from being a high school teacher, so I was not in the business world at all. And so the germ of the idea, I would say, landed for both of us while we were in business school. Then here at Manhattan GMAT, Carrie is an instructor for us and also is currently a consultant at McKinsey. And
there's a lot of free time.
In her free time, she does the consulting for McKinsey.
Right.
but her primary work is for us.
Of
so
course.
we had both worked with a couple of students who, after being admitted to top business schools, one of them came to us and said, "Hey, what kind of accounting course? I'm a little nervous. I'm coming from an advertising background, and I hear that it's all cases, and I'm going to have to learn this stuff on my own. Anything you'd suggest?" And as Carrie and I were talking, we shared our stories about coming from somewhat non-traditional backgrounds, not having a lot of the wherewithal going in that some of our classmates had, but really, once you get to business school, you realize there's something that everybody's missing. That's part of the reason that business school is so valuable, because people come with different backgrounds. And we thought, you know, we've had other students say to us, is there anything I should do now that I've gotten in? And that was the genesis of the book.
Great. So basically you recognized the need and decided to fill it.
Yep, yep. And we, as business school students ourselves, had that need once upon a time. And what we're trying to do in the book is not provide an MBA by any means. This is for folks going to get one. So while there's some of those 600 plus pages, a good number of them are a primer on some of the academic
right.
content you're going to face, say stats and accounting and things like that.
For the listeners, the more technical academic stuff is incredibly clearly written.
Well, thank you.
So if you are coming from a non-traditional background, in this case I'm talking to listeners, if you're coming from a non-traditional background and you want to see just the basics of accounting or finance or perhaps the statistics that you're going to need to know so that you're not completely looking at it cold when you land on campus, this is really just an excellent thing to go through.
Thanks. We were struggling with how to pitch that part because there are some really good texts out there, and we didn't, as I mentioned, try to put a whole MBA's academic content into. I mean, you'd need much more than this, and it would be lacking. It's really okay. Maybe there's some quant, some specific business terminology that I want to learn about before going, and this is a way to get that. There aren't exercises in the sense of, hey, here are 20 problems to practice that stuff on. It's more exposure to the concepts, which all too frequently can be skimmed by, or the big picture can be skimmed by in a particular class. And that's not the fault, and I don't think that's we both saw that to some degree in our programs. I think it's just a matter of professors at business school are specialists by their nature. They have PhDs, they're advanced practitioners in a particular field. And while the business school as a whole and many of the professors themselves do strive to not only ground it but to connect to other disciplines and so forth, that's often left up to the student himself or herself to make those connections. And so we felt, hey, here's a gap we could fill.
I think you've done quite well at it. Now, in the intro to the book, you established the quote-unquote hardest thing about B-School. Can you tell us about that?
Sure.
I'm sure you know what I'm referring to, right?
I do. If you ask 10 business school students what's the hardest thing about business school, you'll get probably 12 different answers, maybe 27. But as we went through and were thinking, and then also we talked with dozens and dozens of students to write the book, current students who had been former students of ours here at Manhattan GMAT, or had friends of theirs or friends of friends or other people that we just knew.
Mm-hmm.
As we talked to folks, and it brought up our own memories of what it was like to be in business school, what we decided for our answer to the question, what's the hardest thing about business school, is this balance, the balance between changing and staying the same. Changing in response to what you're learning, this really transformative experience. And it was transformative for me, it was transformative for Carrie, and for so many others that I know. It's transformation, right? It's change. And at the same time, you have very limited time in business school, and in particular, if you're going full-time and you are, say, a career changer as I was, and that summer internship's all important, you have months to figure out a way to tack across the water. The winds are blowing all kinds of different ways, and you're in your sailboat, and you've got to say, I'm going for consulting, or for marketing, or for finance. There's got to be some career direction, and even more specific than that. You have the ability to explore to some degree, but you've also got to make some decisions pretty quickly about what you're not going to do. If strategy from a company's point of view is deciding not only what you'll do but what you won't do, right, so too do you have to have a strategy when you land at business school, first day, first week, first month. And that's really the hardest part. Sure, time management, but why is the time management hard? Well, they give you a lot of stuff to do, and you're constantly making that call between, I'm open to this change, I am open to evolving, and on the other hand, no, I am not changing in this way. I'm staying true to the reason I came back to school for, and I am not going to go to that company presentation in a field in an industry way outside of what I'm interested in, even though I know I'm closing a door by not going.
Right. I think that balance is really critical. But mm-hmm. I think, in my book, I wrote a lot about the importance of goals. Mm-hmm. That's really the guiding light, certainly in the application process.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
in school itself, when you're choosing how to prioritize. But I think the point you make very, very capably in your book is that once you're there, you also want to be open to opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be open to at least some experimentation, perhaps not like it was in college, not like it was
for
18, 19, 20, but still not to be so focused on that very important goal. That's your reason for being there. That's your reason for giving up the 2 years of salary and paying the tuition dollars, incurring the debt, that you miss out on things that could be very, very worthwhile.
That's right.
And not directly related to your goal.
Yeah, and so you've got to do a sort of portfolio play. I think you have to say, I am going to do both. I am going to change, and I'm going to remain true to my goals that I had originally set out. And that means in certain ways you stretch yourself, and in other ways you play to your strengths, to put it in a kind of a finance kind of way of you hold some
investment. Yeah, that almost
goes
into the catechism of B-school cliches.
Right. The portfolio play and all the different acronyms you're going to start throwing around.
Right.
So you have some investments that you are pretty secure in, and I think what you're pointing up is that there should be a continuity between what you said to get into business school and what you're going to do while you're there.
I mean,
and what you're going to do after. Right. There should be some, I don't want to say linearity because that sounds so confining, but there should be a direction, a forward momentum to it. And, hopefully folks are honest and authentic in their essays, and admissions officers have very good BS detectors to detect when you're not. So for one thing, revisit a little bit why you said you wanted to go back to business school, and use that as a former head of Bain who was not running for president, Orit, and I can't remember her last name, but her first name is Orit. She talked about True North, and even drew that as a sort of compass needle, and what's your true north? And so you already know what your true north is going in, but at the same time, there should be some experiences, there's going to be a plethora of those things. And if you just treat business school as if it's a collection of skills to learn and of people to add to a collection, that's a very narrow way of looking at it.
Agreed. What are your three most important tips for MBAs about to land on a B-school camp?
Three most important tips. One I would say is get organized.
Yeah.
Whatever method you use, there's a guy in my class who said, Chris, you're the clipboard guy. And that's because I had been a high school teacher and a coach, and I didn't walk around with a whistle anymore or anything around my neck, but I think I was the only person in my class who walked around with a Staples clipboard, one of those classic ones, because I just kept everything clipped to that.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is in the days of the Palm Pilots and so forth. That's definitely dating myself to within like a two-year window, right?
Yeah.
one, get organized whichever way it is, and you may not be able to put it all through one system, but you need a pretty clear way of managing everything. Number one, get organized. Number two, carve out time. And by that I mean make sure that you have chunks of time that you cut yourself off from social media, from the phone ringing, from internet IMing, Facebook updates, Twitter, all the rest. Because I think in this world of multi and what's the next word past multitasking, there ought to be something. It's so easy to not have chunks of time to really absorb something. And I think for business
school, you mean like maybe in the classroom?
Yeah, right, exactly. Like in the classroom, maybe actually turn off your phone, crazy as it sounds. Some professors will ask you to do that, and don't be irate when they do so, because they want you to be fully present, fully there.
Yeah.
And you're going to also have to do that on the outside. And the third thing I'd say is be upfront with your team, in particular about process. It sounds a little geeky, but if the first one's about get organized, the second one is carving out time, chunks of time for things that you need to devote yourself to, whether that's a run, whether that's I'm going to really read this case or, you know, this chapter, this book, and really devote myself to it and really be there. The third thing that's a very central component of your school life and can really affect it is how you are with your team or teams. And it's a new way of working, and what makes it so different and so hard in comparison to teams you might have been in the working world is that there is no boss. So there's no one saying, all right, y'all just stop your bickering and I'm telling you how to do it, right?
Right.
You've got to carve out the leadership from among you. So oftentimes that's surfacing what your different priorities are. Some folks are saying, hey, I've got kids to get home to, and I really need to carve out time for them on the weekend, so I want us to be really efficient during the time that we're getting together. Another person might say, hey, well, what I really want to do, I know I suck at Excel, I want to be the person on the next project to build the Excel spreadsheet, which is going to take us twice as long. So, you know, your efficiency, you know, what are your different priorities are, and it's going to be a give and take. But too often, the sort of nightmare teams that you hear about, most teams work well, a few teams work awesomely, and then you hear about, like, oh, such and such a team has spiraled downwards. And all the people, all the individual people on there are all fine, are all cool, but somehow the team, they can't work together. And so I think a little bit of attention to process and, okay, let's all go out for a beer or a white wine spritzer, whatever people want to drink, and just talk about what are our priorities individually for this class, for business school. Let's get that out. And it's not just for friendship. It's so we can all work together.
Right. Makes sense. What do you think? I mean, I think somewhere in the book it said you interviewed about 200 people. Course of writing the book. Was there any consensus among the people you spoke with about what were the biggest mistakes that students could make in terms of how they arrived or upon arrival?
Maybe not a consensus, but some of the most salient and memorable descriptions from folks were around this might sound a little scary, but you only get the first chance to make the first impression, right? You don't get the second chance.
Right.
And we discussed earlier about how you brought up that business school is time for less exploration in some ways than college. But at the same time, a number of folks, and it's not all bad, will treat this as a college-y experience, maybe even more like high school, maybe even more like middle school, as we make the analogy. Everybody knows everybody else's business. It can be like a fishbowl. And the first person to do something ridiculous at a party or in a class or what have you, that stuff is, it flies around the grapevine very quickly. And I managed to make a pretty good fool of myself in front of the entire school. At Fuqua, there's something called Fuqua Vision, which is a half an hour to an hour long video show that gets put on every quarter, and even more often, and shown at the after the last happy hour of the quarter, just before finals. Everyone pours into the auditorium to see. It's kind of like Saturday Night Live, lots of little skits.
Yeah.
And you know, with my ever frustrating dabbling in the entertainment world and the film world, I thought, oh, this is perfect. So I'm there. What do? I immediately film myself in a baby blue tuxedo getting, like, knocked out in some kind of weird way. And I don't remember exactly what the premise of this this skit was, but as it was being shown to the entire school, and it was pretty quiet in there. In fact, there was very little laughter, and I knew that it was going to go for another 45 seconds, some of the longest 45 seconds of my life. I realized, wow, I've introduced myself to a lot of people who don't know me as this utter fool in a baby blue tuxedo. Fortunately, that I did manage to come back from that and make some skits that were funny the next time. But it's a very... everyone's there with great expectations about how wonderful an experience it can be, how cool and everything like that. And it can be. That can lead some people to lose their minds, it seems like, in the first week. And so I would say play it cool. You'll hear in the first week a lot of folks say, well, I worked in this area and that's a stupid idea because the way we did it at XYZ company is such and such. And, you know, be respectful, be listening, be open. It's not that, of course, be proud of where you come from and you're there to share your particular experiences with everyone else. That's what, if you stay quiet the whole time, then you're not actually contributing.
Right.
But maybe at the start, you know, first gear. You don't have to tear out of the gate and be the person that says, oh, you're that guy.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Do you have any special suggestions for international applicants who perhaps didn't live in the United States or international students when they arrived?
There's a balance to strike here, too. And the balance that I would say, in particular for international students, is using the community that you come with, because frequently there are other people from your country or from your part of the world, and it's important to form quick bonds with them. And maybe you already have done so. You've already been in touch with each other over the internet. And I think that's super important, especially when, say, there are spouses involved and a whole family moving, then you want a support network where maybe, you know, your spouse and someone else's spouse can hang out and speak the language that they grew up in.
Right.
That kind of network is really important. In a sense, you don't need anyone else to tell you to form that. The balance to strike, and it's a little unfair, but it's the nature. The balance to strike is how you reach out and how a student who moves five blocks to go to the school, how you reach out towards each other. And it's not just your responsibility if you're an international student. It's also the students who are domestic
right.
at that school. I don't mean to put it on, it's not any one person's responsibility or any one group's. It's fantastic that that many schools have really taken it as a core part of their mission to make sure that there are lots of international students. And so I think the FEQA proportion was something around 30-35%, similar at many other similar at many other top programs. And and so it's a real commitment to making it a global school. And all the top schools are that way, and throughout, I think the MBA is itself, by being interdisciplinary, it's also should be a global degree. And so the advice I have around that, or the concern is, sometimes you will be on a team and you're going to be the only person from Venezuela on that team. And whether that was because you were assigned to that team or you are, or you picked it. And sometimes you're going to be, like it or not, the ambassador from Venezuela. Of course, you're going to interact with other folks from Latin America, and maybe there aren't a lot of people from your particular city. That's something of the challenge. There can also be, for some international students, the question of English ability, in particular the differential that can exist between your English ability on paper and your reading and writing ability when you have time versus quick banter back and forth within a team. And so I think it's very important to, for both domestic students and for international students, to be aware of even just language differences and to make allowances. So sometimes the native English speakers will need to banter, and at other times they need to not. So, and slow down and give space for the person whose English, whose spoken English might be a little bit more constrained because it's the third or fourth language that they speak, to find ways to get their contributions in. And that's everyone's responsibility. Again, it's not just the international students. It's not just the domestic students. It's got to be a partnership. And this is one of those things in terms of the three tips you talked about earlier, that third tip around get the process down with your team. Surface those issues. Go ahead and let's talk it out, as opposed to, well, all right, just take it. Just, let it evolve. No, I think you have to actually talk about those things. And it might be you have to give it more time than some people are going to want to say, okay, well, why are we talking about process? Let's just go to work. Well, then things like this, like maybe differentials and English ability, that say nothing at all about the person might have, the international student has the key to the case. And so the domestic students had better shut up and let the international student talk.
Yeah.
To be blunt about it.
I was a foreign student many years ago,
and
there was a tremendous. And when we first got there, remember, everybody wanted to mix with the native population. They weren't terribly interested. And I think that's very common. They didn't need us too much,
and that eventually we
stopped trying.
Yep. So it's important
to my experience.
It's a it's an ongoing challenge. And I think that schools try to, I mean, part of their mission is to help make these linkages across cultures.
Right. And I have to say that that was still one of the best educational experiences I had in terms of, you know, going abroad. But I think there is a very natural human tendency to stick with what's familiar.
Right.
And
right.
I think that this kind of goes back to that whole balance idea.
Yeah.
That you started your book with, that you, there has to be a balance, and I think this is particularly true for students in foreign settings, between being true to yourself, your own culture, your own norms, and at the same time being open to experiencing the society and culture around you. And then as you're pointing out, there's the native students, if you will, and for U.S. programs, it's obviously the Americans, who should, if they want to take advantage of the global reach of the school, which is significantly improved by having a large international student body, they have to be willing to assist the international students who are just learning English or just improving their spoken English, and at the same time open up to them.
That's right on the money. I completely agree.
Yeah. Do you have any last-minute suggestions or words of wisdom for the new members of the class of 2014?
Wow, the new members of the class of 2014. I'm just
feel old.
Yes, and not only feel old, but feel jealous because I feel extremely lucky. I'm really glad that the admissions committee made the decision 2 weeks before the classes started. Say, yeah, we'll take a gander on that teacher. My last words of advice would be, reach out right now to rejuvenate and reconnect with friends around the country, around the world that you might go into some sequestration from for the next 6 months or something once classes start. Even if you're still working at your job, find ways to take a weekend and travel to that other city and see your college roommates or whatever, because once school starts, some of those friends are going to feel neglected, and rightly so, because you're going to have to dive in pretty hard to the world that you're about to enter, this goldfish bowl. You're going to have so many things to do, and it's going to feel like you have very little time to do it. And a thing that can drop by the wayside, like it or not, is your connection with your friends and family on the outside. So, if I were in your shoes, I remember still when I got my admissions email, I was abroad, and I'm really glad for that trip that I was taking in Switzerland. It was just a gorgeous place, and once classes started, I couldn't have done that. There's all that goal stuff of, start reading the Wall Street Journal and all those kinds of things. But, if you're going to business school, you're probably pretty motivated and you are thinking about all these things you got to do. And in a way, it might sound obvious, it might sound goofy, but make sure you go take that, that weekend trip with your buddies. Stay connected to who you are, through that. Because when you get to business school, that will help also keep you grounded. And people will understand that, hey, you're getting into a big thing, share your concerns with them, because you're going to be meeting a lot of new people, and sometimes you'll need to be able to just call up in mid-October that buddy that you just saw here this summer and say, hey, remember when I saw you back in July? I'm having trouble with a whole bunch of things right now, or whatever it is, I need to just, need someone from my hometown to talk to. And they'll be there for you. But now's the time to put a little investment into those relationships before things go a little crazy.
That sounds good. I'm going to add one little suggestion, too, and I think it's in your book, and that is you didn't have any choice. You only found out that you were accepted 2 weeks before school started. But for those of you who already know that you're accepted or who have more time, I would advise you don't plan to arrive on campus the day before or 2 days before, you know, preterm starts or whatever. Give yourself time to get settled, find out where you're going to go on your jog, find out where you can take your dry cleaning, get your bank set up if you're moving it. You know, do all those things so that you have your apartment set up so that when you can, so that you can really hit the ground running.
Oh, Linda, I wish I'd had that luxury, but absolutely right on. Yep. Little investment in that. It's not even, it has to be that much time, but getting all that stuff out of the way, absolutely great. And some folks even, if there's a math camp or something like that that might be optional and maybe you don't have to do it, some folks chose to do it because it gives them that opportunity and a sort of acclimation.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chris, thank you so much again for being our guest here today and for sharing your insight so generously. I'm confident that applicants turning students in that role change mode at the moment who listen to this podcast will be better prepared for the start of school. Listeners, thank you also for joining us. Please share your feedback. 5-star reviews on iTunes are particularly welcome. And you can leave feedback on iTunes, our blog, or by emailing linda@accepted.com. I'm always happy to hear from you. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted.com, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.